Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
Oh, madam.
And the plan was that we were both going to talk about Bad Boys for Life. I had tickets to a late show of Bad Boys last night, and I showed up. There was nobody at the theater.
What? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. So my local AMC never has a crowd. Like, and I mean, when I said crowd, I mean, never has more than seven cars in the parking lot. Like,
wow.
The most people I've ever seen there was for Barbie. Like, and that was like maybe 20 cars, maybe. And even like I went to the Ghostbusters, the last one, Frozen Empire. Mm-hmm. And they even had like the local chapter of the Ghostbusters has like a replica car, and they had some people in costume out there. There was like 10 cars in the parking lot. I mean, this is for the later shows. Now might be busy on like a Saturday afternoon with like kids movies or something. But I usually just wait and go. I'm up late anyway, so
yeah,
I like to go to the later shows. And so I guess nobody was coming. So I had my ticket, but there's usually maybe two people behind the counter.
Yeah.
And I guess either they were done or maybe they didn't show up or whatever. It's fine. So I didn't get to see Bad Boys.
But we do have a very, well, I mean, as you guys know, we are, you see, Rip Rip's already talking about Acolyte, and you guys all know that we're Star Wars stands, and we're gonna review everything that's Star Wars comes our way. So we do have a backup plan. We do have, unless Logan, you did not get to watch the Acolyte, which is very much a possibility here.
No, because I didn't get to see Bad Boys. I actually watched the Acolyte twice.
Okay. All right. But we will probably, like, I'm fairly certain Logan's going to want to watch or going to see Bad Boys. We'll just talk about it at a later time.
Hopefully I can get to see it sometime. I might get to see it this weekend. I don't know. Mm-hmm. If not, hopefully before next weekend. So
yeah, we can do a catch up because, you know, and let's hope that not so many, like, well, it gave me hope when I saw it. I'll say this much, you know, box office turmoil be damned. It really did. Like, I went to see I think it was an afternoon showing. And my place, it's a little bit different. Like, my place, like, you know, like our place, like our local movie theater, it doesn't get busy in the afternoon. It gets busy at night, especially on a Friday. But I can always tell if something's going to be a hit if in my place in the afternoon at the 3 o'clock show, it's packed. And I'll tell you this much, like, it was a packed, rowdy house for Bad Boys for Life. That's all I'll say is that.
I mean, the reviews have been fairly positive, but I mean, we've gotten a lot of movies in the last month or so with pretty positive reviews that people just do not show up for. So,
yeah. It's genuinely, like, okay, so, like, I will say this much as a preview for next week. I'll keep my thoughts for it till next week. But it's very much so of what we've gotten from the summer so far. It's a hodgepodge overstuffed with ideas. Most of them that land, and some that kind of don't, but kind of do. It very much, I will say this much. I was very surprised at, now I understand what their whole plan is. This is very much so that I think they're getting a series together that's more like more like Fast and Furious Miami. Like, that's literally what it feels like. Instead of, like, you know, Fast and Furious takes place in California, this is more like the East Coast version of it. It's very kind of like they've changed the story's telling, and you could tell that it's been 4 years, but this was their plan, right? Like, because the same screenwriters, same actor or same directors are involved, and it very much so feels like a Fast and Furious thing where they're taking story elements and they're just continuing them, which is a very weird thing for a Bad Boys movie because they're made so inconsistently. I mean, the first one, between the first and second, is 10 years. Between the second and third is almost 15 to 20. So I don't know. Like, that's the weirdest part about this, is that it feels more like a telenovela with action in it, like the Fast and Furious. But I'm not going to say it's a bad thing. I don't know. We'll talk about it more once we get there and once Logan has seen it. But, I mean, it's executed very well.
Do any of, I guess this is kind of spoiler. Does Gabrielle Union show up?
Spoilers, guys. Skip this for a minute. No, she does not. Okay. Which was surprising because they make a reference to her. Like, there's a lot going on in this fucking film.
Did you ever watch the show that's essentially just a spinoff? LA's Finest with her and Jessica Alba?
I did. I did watch the first season. I didn't get to watch the second season, and it's nowhere to be found anywhere. It used to be on Netflix. Now it's not. Because I was genuinely curious, because it was Bad Boys low budget adjacent.
It is on, I think it's on Tubi now.
Oh, it's on Tubi. Okay. Then I'll take a look at the second season. It's good. I wish, like, there's a part of me that does like, that was the thing that I thought was going to happen. Because, like, the first 10 minutes is wild. Like, I'm going to wait. I want Logan to see this stuff fresh and with unspoiled eyes. Because literally, dude, the first, like, when something happens, I literally was like, is this fucking movie? No. This is fucking wild. They do something that no Bad Boy movie has done before or since. And I don't think they ever will, because, like, the first 10 minutes made me almost feel like they're shitting the bed and I just need to leave. Like, that's how bad some of the stuff in the first 10 minutes was. And that's the thing that I criticize. I know that sounds wild. Now, looking back on it, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was stupid, but it was stupid in the best way, in the way that I feel it's stupid. And it's very much of the telenovela, melodramatic, overwrought Fast and Furious way of storytelling. But I will say this much: when they do the reveal of something that happens, I was expecting Gabby Union, and when she doesn't, you're really disappointed. And the other thing that I really like, I'm glad that I have a week so I can try to do some deep diving research on this, Teresa Randall as Martin Lawrence's wife, who was in the last one, wasn't in this. She got replaced with another actress, which is weird because all of his kids and Reggie are back for this one. Like, the same actors that play all of the kids, including Reggie, are back. So it's a very weird dynamic. Like, and then the reveal of what's happening, like, and again, I won't ruin it because it's part of the story and you haven't seen it. And like, it's fucking wild. Like, it really is wild. It threw me for a loop. I was like, are they going to really, like, they're doing it this way? Okay. I'm not so sure. But then once the title opens up and it says Bad Boys for Life, everything is kind of set up and you're like, okay, that was a really fucking weird 10 minutes. But I'm going to be okay with it because they're starting stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's getting together. It's just really awkward. Like the storytelling is really fucking awkward. And that's what I will say. But other than that, like, the next hour and 55 minutes is good. It's not great. But, I mean, like, if I'm honest with myself, has a Bad Boys film ever been great? And the answer is no, because they've always been a copy of a copy. And as we know with like Multiplicity, you know, you anytime you get a copy, it's literally a minion. I mean, it's not to say that I don't find Bad Boys 2 to be like the brilliant non-GTA GTA movie that we all deserved in 2002 and 2003. But is it a great film? No, it's not. It's terrible. It's fucking Michael Bay. And Michael Bay does make a cameo again, which I'm always like, okay, so...
It's such a fourth wall kind of thing for a movie like this to do.
That's right. And it's not, and Bad Boys, like the second one, is it Forever? This one's Forever. No, this one is, okay, so this one is Ride or Die. The last one's Forever, or For Life. So, For Life has a cameo with him, and then he has an even bigger cameo, and I asked myself, is this the same guy that's the Porsche guy from the third one, and he just is a friend now? Because he has, like, a speaking role, and he has, like, a first part in the first 10 minutes, and you're like, oh, okay. Because, I mean, you know who Michael Bay is. It always makes me ask, why is he, like, he's not a producer, he's just cameoing. Does he want to come back to the Bad Boys franchise? Is he circling around it going, you guys can get rid of these two other dudes who are kind of brilliant in what they're doing, and just bring me back. Like, there's a part of me that goes, I could see it him coming back. But also I'm like, no, because they have this really interesting vibe now for these two movies that are Bad Boys, but not, I don't know. It's weird. It's a very weird movie, but I enjoyed the fuck out of it. There's some really great, there's not great action, but the chemistry is there. And that's how I feel like this one is almost like the first one, where the first one rides on the chemistry between Smith and Lawrence. But also, like, how they interact with other actors within that chemistry. And that is here big time. Like it felt like all of the actors came back because it wasn't just like they were like, oh, I want to be in Bad Boys because it's an iconic franchise. But they were like, we're coming back because we have, you know, like Vanessa Hudgens. I'm coming back because I have a little bit of a storyline and I'm a big part of the end. Same with Alexander Ludwig, both who probably do things on their own, but not as high of a level. You know, like all of the crew that was in the new version is back, but they're back in a bigger way. Like they have a bigger role, which I know it sounds weird, but it very much so is like I said, it's a Bad Boys movie. It just isn't as budget. It's a little bit more budget thrifty, but I don't mind that because it allows the movie to focus on what I find most important about the Bad Boys franchise, which is Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. So it's kind of like For Life. It's kind of like For Life, where they did a little, like the budget's a little bit leaner, but it's even more leaner than it was for Life, which I know sounds like a damning thing, but they went back to basics, and I think it kind of works. I mean, there's still shit there. There's like an albino alligator that's in the middle of the...
Yeah, I saw that in the trailer.
Like, it's very much like, it's very flirted. Like, the end is very flirted. They got it. Like the whole, like, from the helicopter set piece to the end, it's very flirted. Like, and I say it that way because if you know flirted life, you know swampy, weird-ass shit. I will say this. I need them to release the Reba Bad Boys cover that is in this fucking film because it fucking rocks. And I did mention that I needed Reba to do it because they did the joke about Reba and they do it. And I don't know who produced that banger, but it's bad ass when you hear it in the movie.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm excited to go see it. I hate missed it. You know, had I known, I would have went to a freaking 7:30 show, but I was like, ah, I'll go to the 10 o'clock show, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
So, So before we get to the Acolyte, I've watched a couple of other things this week.
Oh, right. You tell.
One thing, I don't know why, but I decided to do a rewatch of Silicon Valley.
Oh, whoa. Okay, that's one that I have not heard in a long time. I don't think we've talked about it on the show. Why don't you talk a little bit about your love for this show? Because this is something that I know that ran through even the course of, because it's so long. It's like the first 5 years of Film Dispenser almost.
That's what got me into the show. It was not really on my radar, but I think Spencer kind of pushed me to watch it. And I just kind of fell in love with most of the characters. Ehrlich is as problematic as the actor that plays him.
Yes.
I can appreciate that the show constantly leans into all of that. Like, he's never not the, like, he's never an altruistic character. Like, they never try to redeem him. Unfortunately, they don't really get to give him a real arc because of all the problems with what's his name, the actor that played him. So
let's just leave him off. You are correct. Like, he was from everything I've heard, like, he's just been a mess his whole fucking life.
I love that he's stepped out of the woodwork with the upcoming Deadpool 3 and gone back at Ryan Reynolds. And I'm just like, I don't know if you come off looking as good as you think you do. TJ, because Ryan Reynolds has a pretty solid reputation as a nice guy.
Yeah, and he's fucking Canadian, for fuck's sake. Like who do you think that you're like, no one is believing you, bro. Like, after everything that's happened to you and all the cringe and like troublesome bullshit that you've been through, like, you were not a part of, like, you were really, really, really not a, like, you were not anything in that series, like, that could not be, like, just taken away and just forgotten about. Like, if they edited out his shit in the movies and re-released them, nobody would miss him. Like, Weasel is not a cornerstone of that fucking series. But anyways, back to your, they do kind of really do play with his image, which always makes me, okay, so my one little interjection to this is, if they fucking knew how troublesome he was, like, Silicon Valley had like the ability to do really fucking funny shit with that and cut him out, but they didn't. They kept him there, which is always a little troubling for me. With this show that is already kind of like, I got through it, but I never found it as funny as like everybody did because of how cringe it is. Like, it's fucking cringe, the show. And I know you kind of have a love with this kind of thing.
I don't think it's on the level of something like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is often too much for me. But it does have a almost BoJack kind of like these guys are so horrible. The one guy who isn't really that bad is a Satanist.
what I love, because it's like they do the Satanists with a smile, right? Like, I have mucho respect for Silicon Valley because it literally, I don't think that it gets credit enough for showing just how fucking terrible Silicon Valley bros are.
I mean, it's such a, like rewatching. I rewatched the entire series.
Did you rewatch all 56 episodes?
I really started last week. Week before, I'd watch like season one. But I thought that I was like, oh yeah, I needed something to watch and I put it on. But then I started season two and then I was just breezed through the entire rest of the show. It is fucking weird how, like, at the time, I guess I didn't know enough to realize what the show, like, how accurate it was, like, that it wasn't this, like, kind of fantastical, like, portrayal of things. But, like, now, it seems, like, so prescient. Like, it's just
fucking
crazy how much they got, like, not right. Just, it was just on the nose. You know, it was kind of like watching a comedic version of Mr. Robot, where, like, every time that show did something, like, months later, it was like the real, it was happening in the real world. But I kind of appreciate that the show leans in, much like BoJack, it leans into the problematic nature of a lot of that and kind of just roots around in it and explores it. Like, what's his name that plays Russ? I can never remember that guy's name, but Russ Hanneman, the fucking Trace Comas, you know, billionaire douchebag.
Chris Diamondopoulos.
Yeah. He's like, he so rarely gets to play that kind of character, and watching him just like grab it like a dog with a bone and just but like, it's also, he's problematic, but he's also trying to be like, he thinks he's trying to not be problematic, like,
yes,
and in doing that he becomes problematic. Like, it's a Mike Judge thing, and
it really, like, is.
And not for nothing, I think this show really sets up HBO embracing something like Barry.
Like, or, and also, like, what nobody talks about, this is the grandfather to Succession. Without Silicon Valley, they can't make Succession. Because all of the dynamics of the way that the show works about big business, like, it doesn't work. Like, I don't care what Adam McKay does. If they don't have Silicon Valley, it doesn't begat, like, because they always do that kind of stuff, like HBO. They take one series and they kind of make something that's similar but completely different, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're absolutely right, because Alec Berg doesn't get his, like, true kind of, like, creative stutter step, because, I mean, he directed so many episodes of Silicon Valley. I think he, 20 or something like that? I always remember him and Judge being the guys who directed the big episodes. Like, they were either the first episodes, the mid-season episodes, or the end. Like, they were always, like, in control of that. And you could tell, like, I mean, yeah, it's, like, how, like, at the end of the day, like, does it still work as a series as a whole? Like, is it even better than it initially was because of everything we've learned about Tech Bros?
I mean, I think so. I think it absolutely works. Like, even, like I said, the problems with TJ Miller, even the lead actor, Thomas Middleditch,
who has been
accused of things. It still works for me, just because, like, it kind of enhances that, yes, these people are problematic and you can feel sorry for them, but, like, they don't do themselves any favors because they're kind of just shitty human beings. I think the final episode is I mean, it's okay, but like setting it up for them, like, quote, saving the world because they've created this AI that, you know, which also, like, I mean, they talk about things with AI that at the time seemed a little far-fetched and now are so, like, oh, shit, that was on the money. I think they give a little too, of course, a lot of people did back then. It's a little too much, like, Elon Musk is a genius stuff.
Yeah.
They don't do a lot of it, but the Tesla stuff becomes a big point in the, like, the last couple of seasons. But yeah, the final episode, I don't think completely really works. Like, that faux documentary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like a okay, I mean, sure, but overall, yeah, it's still really, really funny. It's pretty compelling, and you know, it's honestly worth it just for like the comeuppance moments. Where, like, everybody kind of just gets their shit.
Well, that was always my favorite moments. Like, I watched the show, but it was a very strange thing for me because it was the same thing that about Succession was there was nobody that I had empathetic feelings towards. So, like, whenever bad shit happened, I laughed so hard at these assholes. Because I hated every one of them from the beginning, from the get-go. Like, there's nobody that you can... This is a show where I don't feel like if you want an attachment to somebody, if you want, like, oh, well, Josh Richard Brenner's or Big Head.
Big Head is probably the only character in the entire show that... It's hard to root for him because he keeps falling ass backwards into success. He's a nice enough guy, but he's an idiot. And it's just like, that makes him hard to root for. because but it's also every boss and boss's boss and VP and executive you've like ever had. And it's just like, how the fuck do these people get their jobs?
And it's like literally just fucking backtracking into stupidity and luck. Like, there's like, there's literally no one that you root for in this show. And if you can get around that and you can just look at the folly of it all and just wait for these idiots to have their cringy comeuppance, it becomes this really classic series of like, oh, you're an asshole. I can't wait for you to fuck up. And then when they fuck up, the concussions and the ripples that fuck up makes is some of the most classic stuff that like
the episode where they're trying to move the server from the house to the university and they put it on the truck and then like he's gonna fuck over Big Head and they go to the back of the truck and it's like it wasn't locked and it's like all of their equipment is just thrown out on the streets of Silicon Valley and it's just like
San Jose.
It's just like it's what you fucking get, man.
I mean, even a character like Dinesh, like you like man like
you want to root for him from the jump, but like the more successful he gets the more shittier he gets and it's just God. Like you suck, man.
Yeah, and like the funniest part about Silicon Valley is that I always had I had no illusions about this, and I like just watching like I wish that more people had watched it to see this like and understood how like tech bros should not have been ever like heroized by the world, but at this time people were heroizing them and thought it was cute that this show was taking such a savage knife to them, even though they didn't think it was a savage knife. They're like, oh, you know, Mike Judd's made this great, like, you know, zeitgeisty comedy where I feel like Mike Judge, because of his weird Texas-ness, was like, well, I'm going to really fuck these guys over, and I'm going to do some shit to them, and just realized that nothing was working. Like, it was supposed to be punk rock, but it never became punk rock because everybody found this thing adorable. Like, that's literally how I feel, like, and I think that's what kind of pushed me away from it. But it also gave me some distance because so many people loved this show for the wrong fucking reasons. Like, they loved it because, oh, look, it's kind of like Curb, where these guys are just like, they're kind of goofy and fun and this shit happens. And then not like a serious conversation of like, this is the way that Silicon Valley works. That's why they ruined the music industry. That's why they're going to eventually ruin film. Cut to 2024. What's happened 5 years after the show? And it's literally like, I mean, you could literally do a sequel to Silicon Valley and like it would be a different show, but it would be kind of the same savagery, right? But you look back on it, and now that you said it, now I think I might actually want to do a view of it because of just how like it was set up and it's designed to like have like it's always weird how like critical reaction and people like, you know, and like just the community writ large react to something when you go, is that really the intent? Was that the intent? Like Succession is like this, like, was the story of Succession supposed to be like something where people actually fucking root for billionaires, trashy ass billionaires? But then again, I look at it and it's like, well, the whole 2024 of it all, we have people fucking like, you know, saying that a convicted felon should still be running for, you know what, and I'll just leave that out there. But I've gotten a sidetrack. What I'm actually curious about, like, you know, like the extended guest stars, how did that kind of like with the rewatch of it, how did like people like Tobolowsky kind of fare in your rewatch?
He's so much fun to watch. He's just an absolute blast. The whole thing between him and Gavin, and
yes,
like the distance between California and going to wherever the fuck it is they were always going to, it's pretty funny. Him when he takes over Pied Piper and like building the box and like all of that nonsense, I think it plays pretty well. Like it's still really, really funny.
Okay. They're just like certain people, like certain I just kind of wonder about like some of the subplots, because there's some really wild subplots in that show that like I completely forgot about. What about Jimmy Yang's character? Like, how does that fare? Because that could be super troubling now.
I mean, I guess if you had somebody like, it doesn't bother me, but it's hard. Like, it's not really mine to say. Like,
yeah,
I guess I would want to know how he feels about it now.
Okay.
But you know, it reminds me a lot of the Anyang subplot from
Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Right.
Where it's like, at first it seemed like this is like vaguely racist, but mm-hmm. like they're so stupid. It's just like, I don't know. He comes out ahead for the most part, but also every time he gets really involved with him, it just fucks him over worse. And like, one of my favorite, it's so stupid. One of my favorite jokes in the show, and I actually remembered it, is when it came up in the last season. It made me laugh so much. Jimmy Yang's character has Richard's name in his phone as Bitchard instead of yes, Richard.
That's
but,
right.
But then so does Monica, because like Richard calls him for something. Right. And it comes up as Bitchard, and he's like, yeah, your white witch just shut me down. And so then he has to call Monica, and Monica looks at her phone and it says Bitchard too. Like, yeah. That joke, that's so funny because, like, it seems like they're making fun of his like accent. But then when you see it on Monica's phone, it's just like, oh no, this is what they call Richard behind his back.
His back, which is something that is like that deep into the run of the show. Like, I remember that now. Like, that deep run of run into the show to have something revealed like that is hilarious.
Yeah.
Is truly hilarious. Like, oh, that also leads me to another question, which is, how do Monica and Lori like fare in this rewatch? Like because it's really rough for them, like, in the show, at least what I remember. But is it more of a, like, oh, this is literally how these fucking assholes work?
I love that the show ends with Lori in prison. Like, they're just interviewing her in prison. No, there's no, like, reference to why she's there. That, like, nothing. It's just she's in prison because, like, somewhere along the way, she just got too heavily involved in a bad deal. She comes off, I mean, she was always ruthless. Like,
yes,
the show lost a little bit of it's weird to say soul when they lost the actor that played Peter Gregory, but, like, they do good enough with the pivot to Lori, and she's mostly fine. Like, they never shy away from painting her as, like, very hard-nosed when it comes to the business stuff. Monica, it's only in the last season that they realize the character is kind of heartless, and they embrace that with the whole, like, women in tech thing, where she's like, I support women in tech, and she's just really really doesn't support anybody. There's a whole thing with her and Guilfoyle where they're the HR lady is like, yeah, you know, you guys are not seen as likable amongst your peers, and so they're trying to boost their scores and get people to like them, and nobody likes Monica.
Nobody. Nobody. And that was like, okay, so like, that was some of the, like, that was like kind of like the weird ruthlessness, but also kind of accurate, that I was wondering how it fares, because it does feel like a weird, like, for both of them, because they're the two primary female leads, there seems to be this thing in the show where they pivot from, like, sketch. The reason why people disliked Monica was not just because she was ruthless and heartless, but because of the fact that she was just a woman in tech. And well, it's a boys'
club. Show, I think, does a really good job. There's an episode in one of the last few seasons, it might be the last season, where Richard says something about them being friends, and Monica says, are we friends? Like, last name? Where do I live? Do I have an apartment or a house? She brings up, like, all these questions that, like, you would know these things about your friends. These people, Guilfoyle and Dinesh and even Ehrlich and Jin Yang, like, they're your friends. You know a lot about, you know nothing about me. And, like, while that is, like, a thing, like, to point out that, like, yeah, she's not really your friend, Richard, it's also the show saying, like, we've done zero to show you, like, this character beyond who she is in relation to Pied Piper. Like, they kind of touch on it in the first season, because, like, it seems like there's this will they, won't they kind of thing that they might do with her and Richard. But, like, it's quickly squashed by season two. So.
No, absolutely, because it was just, I was like, they're not, like, I think some of the stuff that they tried, like, that they were attempting to do in that first season really bothered me, because I was like, you don't know this. You really honest, like, and now that I look back on it and Mark, we're having this conversation, a lot of my thoughts about it were kind of misled because I didn't let Judge and his writing group figure it out. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was already just kind of, oh, okay, this is not what I need. This is not what I need. Like, I don't like Tech Bros. Like, I mean, like, you know, when it came out, it was like, man, I've dealt with Tech Bros for, like, since the Napster days, like, you know, since the early era. And I'm like, but I didn't ever give him a chance to figure out and feel, like, this writing crew, like, to feel out what the show should be. And they did do that. Like the funny part is now if I think about it and I look back and I kind of replay the show in my head with your kind of discussion about it, they really did do a great job of pivoting and trying to figure out what worked and what didn't. And when they found the core of what it should be, they ran with it, right? Like they find that they get their ground pretty quick within the show, and they figure out what it is, and it's constantly evolving, at least from what, like, now, like, I'm replaying it. And that's something, like, I should ask you is that in those what, 5 seasons that we have, or 4 seasons, like, does it feel like they are shifting and adjusting as necessary not to the culture, but to what the show should be at its best? Because it always feels like by the end of the season, it's really like if my memory serves me correct, like, it really has a stranglehold on its story. Like, it knows where it needs to go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I absolutely think so. Okay. I really think I'd be interested to, like, find out for sure that between, like, season 1, I think, was them figuring a lot of stuff out. Yes. I really think they had a Bible for the show by the time they got to season 2. They had a firm grasp. They had to pivot with some things, like TJ Miller for sure. And they do a good job with that. But I think they had a pretty firm grasp on, like, where each season would go, how many seasons they kind of wanted to do, and what the ultimate end for all that is. So, would you stop barking at me? She's so mad because I'm not paying her any attention.
Well, you're also talking about Silicon Valley. So, you know, she wants to, like, tell her opinion as a female and a dog.
Yeah, she's like, get off the podcast. Let's go sit and watch TV. I think they really, really, like, had a solid Bible because, like, I don't know. It would be really something to find out that they lucked into the ending of, like, calling all the rats, you know, with their little, like, AI, you know, compression thing. Like, you start out with, we're calling it Pied Piper, and then you end with, like, oh, our launch is, creates this problem where, like, it's a sonic noise that only rats can hear, and rats they swarm hear the streets, and, like, it would be really interesting to find out they just happened to luck into that ending and not like, hey, this is the ultimate end when they launch, this is what's going to happen because we called it Pied Piper.
Well, it also feels like a very Mike Judge animated series kind of thing, right? Like it really does feel like something that could happen on, like, I know it sounds weird, but like Beavis and Butthead or King of the Hill. Like, it's literally something that you go, that's kind of a stroke of brilliance. Like, it's a left-hand hook from Muhammad Ali that you just never see, right? Like, because it's like, the ultimate thing is like, it's so fucking obvious. Pied Piper? Rats? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's like, it's almost stupid. It's like that's the kind of brilliance of Mike Judge at his best, right? Like Office Space is so fucking obvious, but it's obvious in a way that nobody thinks about, like, right? Like, you just talk about stuff, right? And, like, you know, it's a joke, like, oh, what if, like, something, like, you know, isn't it kind of ironic and funny that the thing that would be the downplay is the name of the company?
Yeah.
Like, and nobody saw it coming, you know? But, yeah, it really is kind of, it kind of makes me want to, rewatch it, like, do a kind of casual rewatch just to kind of confirm certain things and kind of watch the,
like, I think my goal was to do a casual rewatch, but by the time I got halfway into season two, I was just like, I forgot how good this show was.
It's 30 minutes, like, the episodes are 30 minutes long, yeah, so, like, it becomes that easy thing to, like, add up five or six of them at the same time.
So real quickly, the other thing that I watched this week was the very last production from Rooster Teeth, Red versus Blue Restoration, which they put up online to buy or rent and then shuttered the whole company. I don't know if we've ever talked Red versus Blue. I don't know if you were ever into any of the stuff that Rooster Teeth was doing, but I was a huge Red versus Blue guy for a long time.
Okay. I was not. Even when it was on Netflix, which is, I feel like, was that the apex of them, like, being able to, like, I don't know. But I was never, it wasn't that I wasn't a fan, it's just I never got into it. So why don't you, I know what Red versus Blue is, but why don't you give them a breakdown of just the concept of it? Because as you said, like, it literally, I did see that it was like, wasn't it like a film or something like that? Short? Or something?
Yeah, it's about an hour and 20 minutes, I think.
Okay.
So, I mean, it started of Xbox One days. So OG Xbox, not Xbox One. Yeah. Original Xbox days. Basically started out with these guys who would have these LAN parties playing Halo, and they would do voices for the characters, like, as they were playing against each other. And they basically, the idea was like, hey, we could like record this and like do the voices and put it up online. And they kind of launched this like mini like empire. It was one of the first big like web shows, if not the first big web show.
Also, like, okay, so guys, like, for the younger gen, like the alphas and the z's, like, a LAN party is basically what you guys do on Twitch, but with your own hardware. I know it's really,
you have to do it in person.
In person with different TVs and different like why they called it a LAN party was because you had to use your LANs to actually connect, because Xbox didn't have like Twitch or anything like that. So these dudes were doing this shit on the fly and recording it on the fly in a very wild way. It wasn't all made for them in a box. These guys were like the pioneers. These guys were, this was the ancient days. I know that you guys don't know about these things. You just think that they were produced.
It's interesting now, like, I've rewatched the series, especially like the first five or six seasons, multiple times. It's interesting to go back and look and think about that, like, they had to set up their own shots within the game. Yep. Like, later seasons, they had access, like, Unreal gave them access to the Unreal Engine. They were able to just create their own cinematics. But the early seasons, it was all in game. Like, everything they did was in game. Like, and it's unique, it's funny, it takes a lot of like liberties with the Halo property, but it also, like, really embraces like what parts of it are in a way that even the show that called itself fucking Halo does not. Like, it understood that universe better than the show that was made from it. Yes. And like very fan embraced, but like somewhere along the way, they just, I mean, they became a company, and really, I think ultimately that becomes their downfall, is being a company. It becomes not just friends hanging out, doing this thing and throwing it up online and, you know, making a few dollars. It becomes an actual legitimate business, and they were doing multiple shows, and you know, people had fallings out, and it just, like, so much so that there's several characters in this last iteration that are not voiced by the people that had been voicing them from the jump. And it's kind of upsetting. There are several characters that don't even show up. It's very, it's not a good last hurrah, unfortunately.
But like, it's kind of ironic that you did Red versus Blue and you did Silicon Valley together, because like the behind the scenes, I knew more about the behind the scenes than I did actually the stories, because it did get like, let's talk like around, like, it started around the early era, but like it really gained prominence around 2010 or so, 2011, like where the DVDs and Blu-rays started coming out of them and everybody started watching them, and they kind of got into beyond the gamer culture. It became like this pop culture thing for a minute. And like, it's like, you know, the hubris of everything kind of like becomes very like present in this, because the behind the scenes stuff is really kind of it like, you know, it's very much like Silicon Valley. Like the, like a lot of like what is perceived of as a lot of money starts changing hands, and people start wanting their cut of the pie, and it becomes a machine, right? Like literally a machine. And I just never got into it. Like, it's weird because, I mean, as a guy who's a pretty big gamer, but then I've not been an Xbox guy. Like, I've not been a Halo guy. Yeah. I was a Call of Duty guy. And as we all know, Call of Duty is always, like, on PS, with a PS thing. So, like, if Red versus Blue had, and Rooster Teeth had gone Call of Duty, which never would have happened. I feel like Xbox was like the perfect platform because they were always in second place. And so having something like this made them cool, right? So like, of course, you know, everybody that's around like Xbox and Halo are going to be like, this is making us look badass. Like honestly, like I remember, like, it was like, it's like anything that the internet like produces. Like it's something that like becomes a cool kid thing, right? Like if you knew about it, you knew about it in the early days, because it was so kind of like miniature and small when it first started, but it quickly grew, right? Like even the internet back in those days remained undefeated, and you kind of like quickly, like once there wasn't a world with it, and then all of a sudden it became a world with it. Like I remember like another one that's kind of like adjacent to it, but it's earlier, is Homestar Runner, right? Like, do you remember, like, there was a life without Homestar Runner, and then all of a sudden, everybody, including your mother, knew who Homestar Runner was, like, and who knew who Strong Bad was, and was quoting him. And you were like, wait. Just a month ago, I was the only one that knew about this, and I was talking my shit. I felt cool. Now all y'all know this? That's weird. But it was before, it was, like, you know, it was the era in which it was made in, which is, like, you know, this... What feels like, I think what I loved about that time, and maybe you can attest to this, is that there was a true sense of discovery. Like, it wasn't social media telling me what to like or telling me that this is something I need to do. It was just like, it naturally evolved like a mixtape, right? Like a friend gives you this thing. It's like, hey, man, it's like,
I mean, you're not even joking. It wasn't a friend. It was my cousin, right? It was Jacob. Okay. My cousin Jacob, who was a huge Halo guy. Like, we used to play Halo online all the freaking time. He was like, have you ever seen Red versus Blue? I was like, no, what's that? And he sent me a link to... So the show started in 2003. So I wasn't there from the jump. So it would have been like the first, after the first two seasons at least, maybe three seasons. They might have been into Halo 2 by the time I got on there. And like, so I had a lot to catch up on. I think he sent me like the, they used to do these PSAs, like the old like G.I. Joe, like Now You Know PSAs. Yes. But they were all, they weren't real PSAs. They had a like cynical bend to them. And he sent them to me. And like, I just fell in love with, I mean, they're problematic characters. I have this affinity for like people who embrace extremely problematic characters. You know, I think that's more altruistic than like the constantly noble like shit that Hollywood always shovels at us. It's great. I wish everybody was like that, but we're not. We're flawed people. So, you know, it's fun for me when people embrace that. So, yeah, I just kind of fell in love with the characters. And, like, honestly, the idea of, like, these friends creating something, it was very, very lovely to think about. It's extremely sad that it's ended the way it's ended. You know, I hope one day, much like the end of Silicon Valley, 10, 15 years from now, there's this documentary like that reunites these guys and like there's less hard feelings about things. And, you know, it would just be nice. But like you said, like once you monetize something like this, it becomes like a fight for what you think is your fair share of the pie. And everybody thinks that they deserve a bigger piece. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but it certainly kind of seemed like that does become the case. And then like, eventually it just becomes like you're fighting with everybody all the time, you know? So, yeah. You know, that's what happened in Silicon Valley, too. Like, that plays out of, like, it starts out as these guys in a house doing a thing. And it becomes so much bigger. And the bigger they become, the harder it is to, you know, even stay friends. So.
Yeah. Because money. Let's be honest. It's always money, right? With this kind of stuff, it always becomes about who's getting paid and who's not.
Yep.
And, like, I mean, to be perfectly honest, isn't that the core of like going back to what you just watched, Silicon Valley? Like, who's going to get paid and who's not? Like, it's always like, unfortunately, unfortunately for us, like, you know, we're all greedy little sons of bitches and we all want our piece of the pie, which, to be quite honest, like anybody who does a creative thing, they deserve it, right? Yeah. So, you know, wow, this kind of totally took me down at an early 2000s like jaunt, like that gave me memories because I do remember so many people loving this series.
I think if you sat down and committed to watching the Blood Gulch Chronicles, which is the original set of episodes before they like explore, like they make the show a little too big. The original Blood Gulch Chronicles, it's so fucking well written. Like, it's crazy how many different places it goes, how they deal with things like time travel, like legitimately. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really funny and just brilliant in a way that like really only happens when you don't have, like when you don't have to answer to anybody, like that they weren't beholden to any kind of like bosses other than themselves. And, you know, the way they figure things out, it's just, It's genius. It's so fucking funny. It would help if you had been a Halo person, because there's a lot of like Halo in jokes. One of the first jokes in the show is that they're like standing on the base at the top of the base in Blood Gulch, and they're like, "What are we doing here?" Like, and one of them's like, "I don't know. I signed up for the benefits or something." And then, like, next thing I know, Master Chief blows up the fucking Covenant Armada, and now we got to go to war. And like, and that one of the other things, like, there's so much militaristic humor, like, for guys that never served in the military, like. I know people that were in the military that watched the show and are like, this is the stupidity of this is so spot on, where you're just like, some sergeant is ordering you to do something and you're like, but why? This doesn't make any sense, you know? And like another early joke is like, yeah, but like we have a blue base here because they have a red base there, and they have a red base there because we have a blue base here. But we're in a box canyon. We could just leave, and then they'd have two bases in a box canyon, and who would fucking care? Like, some ship is just going to drive by and blow all this up anyway. It was such a good show, and to see it fizzle out the way it did was really, really upsetting.
I know a lot of people who were Halo heads that, like, they consider it, like, I think it's my sister's, like, long-term boyfriend, he loves this and, like, considers it, like, one of the truly great pillars right next to The Office of, like, modern day extended storytelling, because he loves it so much, because he was such a Halo head, and like we'll talk about it in the same regard that he talks about The Office, which I find is like kind of the sweet spot, right? Like, of people, like, and just like the property itself, kind of like where, how much it meant to me, like, you know, like as a whole. So might actually just kind of, between you talking about it and like
it's on Amazon, like with Prime for free. Can stream, I think, all except the last few seasons, which is like the first four or five seasons, like, that's the true heart of the show. Like, everything else is, there's really good stuff later in the series, but it's kind of up and down, but really, if you want to see what the show has to offer, it's those first like four or five seasons that are extremely, extremely good. I will say this, I don't love the versions that they have on Amazon, because the show was done in increments. Like, every episode was like 4 or 5 minutes long. So when they edit it together for like the movie on like each season is basically a movie version on Amazon, there's some cuts in there to make it more streamlined, and like I've seen the individual episode so much, I know where there's like jokes that were there that don't really work because they're trying to do it as a movie. But those jokes were so funny to me that, like, it bugs me that they're not there. But I get why they're not there. It's not going to bug you because it's the only version you'll have.
You're going to see. I'm going to. Right.
So, unless you, like, go buy the OG, like, DVDs, because they weren't edited like that. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I have this DVD place that I go to that literally has these on the bargain bin. For like the DVD versions, not the Blu-ray. I never see the Blu-rays, but the DVDs are there for like $1 a piece. I might go today.
Yeah, I think it's worth it.
like rifle all 20 seasons for $20 and then just have a stack of 20 fucking DVDs. I mean, it's not like my office workspace doesn't have mountains and mountains of Blu-rays. Like, if I showed you guys, you would think that I have an addiction and a hoarding problem, which it's not that I have a hoarding problem. It's just that that's how much media comes to me for review. So yeah. Get off my but I will definitely, like, you've convinced me to, like, even though that I'm not a huge Halo guy, I've played enough. I know the mythos enough. I mean, just by osmosis and people that I know. The funnier part is that, you know, weirdly enough, I always think of one of my favorite, like, European directors that's doing genre, Tommy Rokola. He does this movie. He came to fame by making this Nazi zombie series called Dead Snow. And yeah. The second one is called Dead Snow, Red versus Dead. And I always feel like, and like the entire time that, like, he was doing press tours, he was talking about how much he loved Red versus Blue. Like, and that it's kind of a reference, like his love for it is transferred to this, where it was like at the time, because so many people loved that show and it was such a culty thing, that they named Dead Snow 2 as a reference to Red versus Blue, or Blue versus Red. So, like, just kind of like a weird kind of thing that this guy, who eventually would make one of my favorite, like, now one of my favorite modern Christmas movies in A Violent Night, like, was a guy who was a huge...
I can see that.
Yeah. Like, when you think about it, you're like, ah, that makes sense.
But like, it's that kind of a reverence. So, and like I said, it might lose a little something because you weren't huge into Halo, but like, it'll be minuscule. I think that there are some things, like, thinking about it, a lot of the things were basically us, like, how the hell there were like shots that they would get. Like, now I will say this, they redid a lot of the earlier episodes, once they had better access, they like remastered them. I think some of it in with the Halo 2 version, because the maps look better, is less blocky. But like, there's things like there's this episode where they're going to war with each other, and they blow the Warthog up, and the Warthog is the big Jeep thing. And they get it on top of the base. And I remember watching that and being like, how the fuck did they do that?
Did they do that?
Yeah. Like, and us, like, logging on and being like, all right, we're going to figure out how to blow the Warthog up to flip it on top of the base. And
you're basically trying to do what the Fall Guy did.
Yeah.
Like, air boosted on. Like, they basically did a stunt where they did the, oh my God, that's hilarious, dude. Because it's like when you're a gamer, like, let's just talk about the side things of, like, gaming in massive online or massive open worlds, right? There's shit that happens and you go, wait, how did I do that? I want to do that. Or how did somebody do that? You're watching, like, I'm working on Horizon. The video game Horizons, which, okay, we have a few news bits before we get to the other things, because it reminded me of something that I really wanted to talk to you about, if you had seen it already, the trailer, but it's like, it's weird, because it's like, you get into these weird feed loops, like, I don't know about you, but I do deep dive, like, making sure that I know, like, you know, like, I'll get an area that I do, and then I'll, you know, things, but then it leads to other, like, the solves lead to other things, and people doing wild ass things in games, you go, how the fuck did they do that? And then you end up spending, like, I spent a couple of hours trying to do something with this flying component in the game that somebody did, and I couldn't get it to work. And then, like, ultimately, I figured out that they didn't do it. It was some kind of video editing. It had to be. But anyway, it's just like one of those things where it's like that unlocks like a core memory of, like, how the fuck do you do stuff like that? Like, you started seeing, like, people do stuff on video games, and I guarantee you, it's probably from Red versus Blue. Like, yeah. This kind of stuff. Like, you say that kind of stuff, and you're like...
It's different when you... Like, I get it when people that make movies look at that and go, how did they do that? For us who don't make movies, like, you're just like, ah, movie magic. We play video games. And when you see somebody that plays a game that's doing something, and you're like, wait a minute. Like, how the fuck... Like, you didn't create that. Like, you made it happen in... Like, with the same tools that I have. Like, how did you do that? I have to figure this out.
It's literally the El Mariachi thing, right? Like, you watch El Mariachi and you go, how the hell did he do that with $7,000? And, like, how did you do that? I have $7,000 and I couldn't fucking do that. You asshole, how did you do that? But, absolutely. All right, well, this has just convinced me that I need to watch Red versus Blue.
Yeah, I think you'll dig it. I probably am gonna start a little bit of a rewatch of my own. I may track down the DVDs because, like I said, I don't love the versions that are on Amazon. They're fine. It's just they're incomplete. So I may track down the DVDs. But yeah, I love Red versus Blue, and it deserved a much better ending than it got. But hopefully, you know, like I said, years from now, something more positive will come out of it. So quick news bits. Are you talking about the Venom trailer?
No, actually. But we can't. We definitely need to talk about that. No, I'm actually talking. Have you seen the trailer for Pharrell Williams' autobiography?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard about it? Heard about this wild ass shit? So, guys, we will talk about it once Logan has seen it, but I'm going to tell you this after I saw this preview and what Pharrell Williams is doing, this is at the top of my list of movies I need to see, because, holy shit, he got, like, the thing that I'm just amazed by is the level of talent he got behind the camera, but the bigger thing is that he got Legos okay to make this autobiography about himself, starring like everybody in hip hop that isn't Drake, thank God. About what he, like, you know, about him being a producer, about him like starting his band, and then eventually becoming the superstar that he is. All using his music, which is also another wild ass thing. You guys have to see this fucking trailer. Like you will, like, visually stunning. Like, just like what they're doing with the Legos and his view of, like, his concept of it. I'm very sure, like, this is like literally at the top of my list. Like, it comes out in October from Focus Features. And I think that a lot of us are going to be like, holy shit, we do need to see this. It's fucking wild. But speaking about equally wild, holy shit. Like, I love that they call it The Last Dance.
Yeah.
like, this is Tom Hardy going, I'm done with this character. But with kind of good reason, because they're literally doing I don't even know how to start with this one, man, because it's just so fucking wild.
It looks like a lot of fun. Like, it does. It's so funny because, like, you put this up against, like, the Joker trailer, and I'm like, it's no fucking contest for me.
None.
Like, one of these movies looks incredibly fun. The other one looks fucking pretentious and dark for no reason, and just, like, so full of itself. Like, yes. I cannot wait to see this Venom movie.
Oh my God. Just, like, I constantly forget how funny Tom Hardy is as Venom. But then I'm reminded in the trailer where it goes, we're Venom!
Yep.
We're I like the red band version better because it lands the joke. Because I saw it in the theater. I saw it the IMAX version on with attached to the Bad Boys movie. And it's the green band trailer, because the red band trailer shows fucking Venom eating all four of those dudes' heads that he has which is hilarious. Like, I know it ruins the bit, but fuck, that was funny. Like, I don't know, man. Like, Hardy as Venom is the funniest fucking thing he's ever done. And he's done some pretty funny things unintentionally for me. But this takes the cake.
Yeah. And you just watched a movie.
Yes, he's Nichols in Bike group. Riders.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in Bike Riders. And, like, he is not funny in that movie. He kind of is, but he's not. And he's basically, like, he's doing the Tom Hardy thing. Like, he wants to be Marlon Brando. Like, the character wants to be Marlon Brando. So he starts talking and mimicking Marlon Brando from The Wild One. Like, literally, it's a thing that happened. Like, I was like, what the fuck is he doing? Why is Hardy doing this? And I'm like, okay, there has to be a reason. Because Hardy does everything for a reason. And then when you read about the backstory of the true life story of Bike Riders, you find out the guy literally started the Vandals because one day he was watching Marlon Brando and the Wild Ones on TV, and he was so enraptured that the next day he literally started walking like Marlon Brando in the Wild Ones and talking like Marlon Brando, which he's got this weird high pitch. Like, literally, that's how Brando talks the whole film. And then fucking Hardy does it in the movie, and you think it's stupid, but then when you realize this was a real life thing that happened with this real life guy, he's not being stupid. He's just being Tom Hardy and being deep into the thing. But it's very methody. I always feel like Hardy is not a lot of fun. Like, I don't know if I ever want to meet him unless I had my dog with me, because he would love my dogs, right? Because he's a really big dog guy. I mean, that's why that whole action scene starts is, I've heard that there was an action scene where he's like ripping up a dog fighting thing, like, because, like, and it was something that Hardy wanted in the movie because he's like a firm believer in dog rights, which I am too. It's the only thing that we probably would connect on. But this is like literally like insanity. Like, he's like, it's literally it's an insane person's movie, right? Like, you watch and you go, wait, what? So we're actually getting the Venom storyline about the invasion of, like, you know, of Earth. We're getting it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it seems so.
But the symbiotes.
The cast in the trailer and per IMDb, so you got Tom Hardy, what's her name's nowhere to be seen, it seems like, and she's not listed in the cast, which, I mean, if she doesn't come back, it's fine. Like, that storyline was kind of like enough, you know.
Yeah, Michelle Williams.
Yeah, Juno Temple is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Rhys Ifans is listed in the cast.
Yes. Well, he's the hippie that he's driving with to Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Right there.
Okay. That's why I was wondering, is that Rhys Ifans? Because, like, I'm like, are they going to do a fucking lizard thing? Like, that would be interesting.
I didn't even think about that.
Stephen Graham and Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yes.
They're phenomenal fucking actors, and to watch them like chew scenery with Tom Hardy is going to be so much fun. And Christo Fernandez is listed in the cast, but I don't know if it's just because they're going to show the scene from the end of Spider-Man where he's at, because he was the bartender at the bar where he gets like sucked into the world and then sucked back. So
You also see him in the trailer, because Ejiofor puts the cap on the symbiote toxin or whatever you want to call it. That moment it reveals back, and you can see Christoph Fernandez in the background. So he is there. I did like, okay, so Can I say something? They really need to fire whoever makes these Marvel trailers for Sony, because, like, I feel like I don't think we're getting the movie that these trailers like Let There Be Carnage and like the first Venom and like Dr. Demento or whatever the fuck it's called, Morbius, and like Madam Web, they all seem to be coming from the same fucking person who's making trailers for movies that do not exist in this movie. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, I guarantee you,
Madam Web and Morbius, I get that they were trying to sell movies that they didn't have. Like, they're like, oh, these movies suck. We got to find a way to sell them. With Venom, I do think it's weird because the movies that are there are, assuming this falls in line with the other two, they're fine. That, like, they're not brilliant, but they're fine. They're fun, you know. Yeah. So I don't know why you're trying to sell me a movie that isn't there, because the movie that you have is fine.
Exactly. No, absolutely. Like I'm okay with it, right? I'm fine with it, but don't give me here's the thing is, like, you're showing me certain things that maybe you shouldn't have shown me. Like, my big thing is, and I think that it was like in, I know, guys, like, Jermaine Lissier has already talked about this, but, like, it is something that I instantly thought about, which is, okay, so you showed me Russ Advance and you showed me Chiwetel. Both of them are, like, should have been hidden from me because one of them is fucking Mordor and the other one is fucking the Lizard, right? Like, if these are multiverse versions of those characters, which it appears to be, if that's the case, right? Like, these are the non-616 or whatever the fuck Kevin Feige says the cinematic universe is. It's not 616. I know. I'm sorry. Don't ruin it in the fucking trailers for me. Leave that shit for fucking, like, surprises. Like, do what Kevin does. Like there's a version of, like, okay, so, like, if we got Deadpool and Wolverine during the Fox era, I guarantee you every goddamn character spoiler would be on screen on the first trailer. And we would have no fun because that's what Sony did. And that's part of the reason why I'm saying they need to fire this motherfucker, whoever's cutting these trailers. And if it's a third party that they're sourcing it out to, fire them and get somebody else. Or better yet, you know what? Maybe consult with Kevin Feige or take Kevin Feige's advice seriously and go, yeah, don't ruin it. Like, let people fucking discover this for themselves. Just saying, because you could still cut an awesome, like, if you took those things out, it's still an awesome trailer, right? Like, it's still I'm gonna go see it. Like, I mean, the horse.
I wish the horse thing was a surprise. I get why it's there, and it does get me hyped. But it much like Darth Maul's double bladed lightsaber or any number of things that we've seen in trailers, fucking Hulk catching Iron Man, like shit that we shouldn't have seen in trailers that, like, would have been so much better as a surprise. But still, it's really, really fun and gets me hyped up. Like, the whole trailer could have just been him with, like, those guys. And the Venom thing. Like, that's all I needed. I was like, oh, shit. I can't wait. I'm so in for this.
Like, all you had to do was just show that whole scene and then cut to Venom, the Last Dance. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm sold. Because that's what I don't come to watch Venom because of Venom. I come to watch it because Tom Hardy understands that this is, like, either a rom-com between Eddie and Venom, or, like, Midnight Run with Eddie and Venom.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's what we're here for, right? Like, though I do appreciate the fact that I think that Venom and Mrs. Chen are finally going to have the romance that they deserve.
When he runs into it, like, that's so great.
Kind of fucking racist, but, like, and fuck you guys for making an Asian woman at a casino, but at the same time, it's kind of brilliant. And the whole, like, will they, won't they of the Venom and Mrs. Chen part, like, I kind of love that. I I don't know why they didn't pay whatever Woody wanted to bring back Carnage. Because, like, literally, I don't know. Like, I really wish that they would.
I mean, maybe that's a surprise in the movie. Like, that's maybe, true. And maybe we'll get that. So,
I mean, maybe. But, like, you know, and also Michelle Williams, though, you, like you said, Michelle Williams really felt like a, like, it felt like they gave her everything and then she was like, yeah, you guys still didn't give me enough, which is true.
I mean, she doesn't really do much in the movies, man. No, like, that's why I'm totally just okay with it. Like, mm-hmm. paying her money just to show up and, like, talk for a few scenes with Eddie. Like, I don't know. We don't really need it. Like, you know, the most of their relationship is in the first movie. And in the second movie, we get the, like, hey, man, like, you know, I get it, but she's moved on. So, you know, like, I, rather than drag it out further, being done is, you know, a pretty good way to go about it. So, you know, maybe there'll be a reference to her or something or whatever happened, you know, with their relationship ultimately, but, you know, we'll see. But yeah, it's an incredibly fun trailer. So,
it really is. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I was looking forward to it before, right? Like, yeah. I think that that's like, I think that we've both been on record. Like, even though I may not have been the biggest fan and I didn't see them in theaters, they're a lot of fucking fun. They're a lot of fun, trashy, trash movies, yeah. right? Like, I mean, like,
reminds me of the stuff I used to watch when I was a kid, like the lower level rental things that it's like, oh, okay, well, I've seen all the big movies. Like, what is this about? So
exactly. No, it absolutely does. And I feel like I feel like this one is like attuned to be like the best one because they're not trying to attach a love story. They're not trying to, they're just making it about the thing that I feel like it should be like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like Tom Hardy has probably been so frustrated because he's just like, it's about Eddie and Venom. And that's all it needs to be about. And it gets gussied up with a lot of bullshit to which he always says, it's okay. It's just about Venom. Like his, like, I can only imagine that his bullshit is very annoying on set. I mean, I've read about what happened on Mad Max. You can read about it. It's fucking wild. He's like, but I feel like maybe his bullshit on Venom was probably justified because it is about Eddie and Venom, especially in this iteration, right? Because it's the one thing that you don't want to skimp out on, at least for me, is like every time, like in the first movie, the movie suffers because Venom isn't on screen as much as we want him to. And that's a weird ass thing to say, because most of the time, like Hulk, you don't want Hulk on the screen all the time. Like he's the snack or he's the dessert in a movie, which Venom absolutely should be. But Tom Hardy makes Venom so violently likable. He's kind of like, okay, so like the only equivalent I have to it is a movie that I adore, which is Devil in a Blue Dress.
Yeah.
Which is, that movie is good. It's really good, but then Don Cheadle as Mouse shows up and that movie fucking soars because of that psychopath. Venom is Mouse, and you can never have enough Mouse or Venom in a movie because they just add this like chaotic component that makes the movie sing. And I think they kind of figured it out with Let There Be Carnage, but you have Eddie competing, like you know, Cletus and Eddie competing with one another, and that's just not something that you want. And I feel like this is finally like, okay, we're gonna have CGI monsters, but it's basically about Eddie and Venom, and that's what I want. I may be wrong, but it feels like this wouldn't have been an issue if this was a Marvel movie, like a true Marvel movie, not in association, quote unquote. Yeah.
It does look a little more focused on, like, just him as a character, as opposed to, like, all these outside forces that they have to introduce, you know, to to, because they think they need that to make him more compelling. And it's, I mean, honestly, like, a movie, I get, like, there are, they've all been, like, big. Like, the first one had other symbiotes, and then Carnage, and then this one will have the symbiotes, like, coming to invade Earth or whatever. But honestly, a Venom movie that's just about Venom, like, taking down a local gang, would totally be up my alley. Like, I don't need the big Earth-saving thing, because it's, like you said, that relationship is enough to keep me interested. It's funny. It's compelling. It's interesting. You know, I don't need the big Earth-saving shit. So, but yeah, it looks like a really fun trailer. So, or a movie based on the trailer. So,
yes, exactly. Well, we will find out in a couple months. I mean, literally, blink an eye, and it's going to be fucking October, the end of October. So, stay tuned, guys. Stay tuned. But with that, do we want to get into some Acolyte?
Absolutely.
All right.
Since I got to watch it twice.
All right, so...
Spoilers for the fucking Acolyte, because I've been waiting 90 minutes to say this.
Okay, go ahead. Say it.
I swear to God, why the fuck do you bring Carrie Ann Moss into the Star Wars universe and fucking kill her within 5 minutes in?
Yep. I have no clue. Other than to say, like,
what a bait and switch that is.
Oh, yeah. That was literally, like, that threw me off and forced me to rewatch it. Like that, that was the,
like,
thing.
Oh, she's not dead. She's not, oh, yeah. She's dead? She's fucking dead.
Which forced me to rewatch it, because I was so, like, the rug was swept under my feet that I had to rewatch it a second time. Because it was so antithetical to what you think of as a Star Wars trope, which I feel like that's why they did it, was because of the fact that it was going to throw you off and throw you off balance. But damn, yeah, like, it was definitely something I was like, huh, what? Okay. And so, like, the next day I rewatched it, and I did that wasn't the concentration, that wasn't the focus of the watch, which I found that was distracting enough to where it threw off a lot of the considered story, the story that they were trying to tell. So yeah, no, absolutely.
It was less. I don't want to say upsetting. It was less distracting rewatching the first episode, knowing that, like, okay, I've made peace. Like, they killed her off in the first 5 minutes. Maybe we get some flashback stuff. Who knows? There's not been a lot out there. Like, she hasn't done any press, but, like, would very much like to hear her discuss, like, agreeing to come on to this show and literally do one scene.
I mean, it's the Janet Leigh of it all, right? Like, I feel like it's supposed to set stakes, right? Like it's a short.
Yeah, but Janet Leigh is in Psycho for like half the movie, and I get she's in this for, like, a chunk of what is ultimately, like, a 40-minute episode, but, like, it's less than 10 minutes of an entire show.
But, like, I also, like, okay, so, like, I feel like the casting, so for me, watching it the second time, the casting was absolutely shorthand for what this Jedi meant to the Order. And to the people, and specifically to the people that are investigating her death or her murder.
Yeah.
That's the way that I took it after the second viewing, because, I mean, she's fucking Trinity, right? Like, Like, that's the thing that I thought about was, like, she's fucking Trinity. They even have her do some of Trinity's signature moves as a Jedi.
Yeah.
And, like, also, it recontextualizes a Jedi better than I think that they've done. Like, okay, so, like, I think the whole show does a really good job of resetting Jedis and the Jedi Order in those first 80 minutes, because she does something, and okay, guys, spoilers, like I've said it before, but we're going to say it again, spoilers, she's given a moment that feels such like a fucking Jedi moment. Like it's not even a second thought to her sacrificing her life for somebody, right? Even though we get that kind of cutaway and we really see what she was trying to save, this relationship between a father and a child, but when she does it, it's kind of like a lot has been talked about what Jedis are and what Jedis aren't. And especially with this show, I'm going to say fucking the fandom is fucking weird right now. Really fucking weird. But I feel like that's like the essence of what I feel like a Jedi would do, is you have the choice of either saving yourself or saving a person or like a being, right? And she chooses to save the being, even though she doesn't know. Like, she can see it coming, right? Like, you can see it coming that this Sith, this Force user, this Dark Force user, we're not going to use the word Sith yet because we haven't gotten confirmation yet, right? Is holding on for dear life for this child. And they can see it coming, and she doesn't do anything about it. She lets it happen, right? To me, that's kind of like the essence of what I want a Jedi to be at its best, right? I don't want them to be a fucking police officer. Like, that's the worst thing that you could possibly do, is make a Jedi a cop, right? But also...
But they also do that as well.
Do that, right? Yeah. Like that's the best part about this show, is that it leans into both the shittiness of Jedis and also the elegance and beauty of what a Jedi could be, right? But I kind of like the way that they play dirty with us, right? Because they're dealing with shorthand, but it also makes it so that we don't have to spend 40 minutes of the episode with her to build it up to a shocking ending, right? It's yeah. Like, what I like about the show, and I think this is something that we'll probably talk about, is the way that it handles how it takes Lucas's shorthand. Like what I miss about Star Wars sometimes is there's a shorthand that Lucas works with in the movies that gives you context without having to build 45 minutes of storytelling. And that was his genius, right? Small bits of information visually, psychologically, like all the layers are there. I don't think that the prequels get enough credit for that, about how good he is at setting up a world, a person, a theme, an order. Like he does that very well. And I feel like this is what I wanted from like other directors, is that understanding of the shorthand and not having to spend 60 minutes doing something that I didn't need them really to do if they knew how to make Star Wars like Lucas makes Star Wars.
It's funny you bring up the prequels, because I feel like this show has far more in common with prequel era Star Wars than any other Star Wars.
Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, and it's weird to see, like, I know it's getting review bombed, like, by, like, quote, easy fans. Yeah, it's just assholes with bot accounts, but like the critics' reviews are overwhelmingly positive. And the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, I feel like this is prequel era Star Wars. And
yes,
like I know that people have slowly come around to those movies, even and me included, like in a sense, and like, they're still not great, guys. Like, they're not. But they're not the movies that we, you know, we shouldn't have crucified them the way we crucified them. Then we wouldn't have been stuck with fucking J.J. Abrams' Star Wars. But yeah, it's a super, it's weird. because there's a lot of these first two episodes, a huge chunk of the first two episodes that is really compelling for me.
Yes.
And then there's like 10% that I just don't think works at all.
Okay, so let's talk about the 10% that doesn't work at all for you, because I'm very curious. We should note that this show was created by Leslie Headland,
who we love.
Yes, because she's done things like she's written for things like Terriers. She's actually the creator of Russian Dolls with Natasha Lyonne, which is probably for me is the apex of what she's done. But she did do a bunch of the movie The Bachelorette, which I'm very high on. I love that movie. Sleeping with Other People's is a very interesting, compelling movie. All of her stuff really speaks to character, which I love, because that is something that is very, very embedded into this show, which we will get to. We will get to soon. But I'm curious about what didn't work for you.
This is gonna sound weird. Osha really works for me. I find that character completely compelling.
Mm-hmm.
May does not fucking work at all for me.
Okay.
I'm so disinterested. Other than like the mystery behind the motive. And mm-hmm. I say it's funny because like if you watch the show, they're played by the same actress. And yes. Like, but in such a different fashion, which is like speaks to her abilities as an actress. And like this is somebody that we've seen essentially grow up like in yes. cinema, because she's in like one of her earliest roles, right, is in The Hunger Games.
Yep.
As
she plays Rue.
Yeah, I was gonna say the little character that everybody fell in love with. So like she's great. But, like, I don't know. May feels so, like, just bland to me. Despite, like, she's trying to kill four Jedi. She fucking kills two of them in the first two episodes. Yeah. So, that's, like, oh, wow. We're really, like, breezing through this. But, yeah, the May stuff is not... It is not compelling at all to me. The mystery is, but it's more the Jedi investigating the mystery. But that said, like, Daphne Keane's Jackie Lon character, love it. Like, Jodie Turner-Smith as Mother, however you say it, and Master Soul, fucking love it. Charlie Barnett, who was in Russian Doll as Yord, fucking love it, man.
Well, okay, can we talk about Yord as a himbo Jedi? Like, they literally, like, okay, so what I love about the series and what I love about her writing, Headland's writing is that she literally takes the guy who you think is going to be the man of action and turns him into a dunce, a himbo But with his shirt off, a Jedi dummy.
I think, like, for me, I'm like, this represents, he is a prime representative of where the Jedi wind up going. Where yes. Master Soul is very much a Qui-Gon-esque character.
Oh, okay, can we talk about that for, like, let's put a pin in there. That for, like, and we'll come back to that, but fuck, that was fucking amazing. Like that Qui-Gon Jinn, like, oh my god! But yeah, go, continue on with the Yordness of it all.
Yord seems like a prototype of Mace Windu, you know?
Yes.
Not that he's not a badass. It's just you're so caught up in the legalese and the, like, how we should do things, and, you know, it, that it's, like, he kept, like, he was, like, so dismayed that Master Soul would let her run around without, like, being restrained, without being watched. And it's just like, we've all but proven that Osha did not kill this Jedi. Mm-hmm. And you're so caught up in the, like you're offended that she left the order, and, you know, like, well, we're not 100% sure. And it's just like, come on, man. You know?
Yeah. Like, you obviously have heard she has twins. So that should just automatically, like, what I, okay, so what I love about the series is something that I love about Attack of the Clones that I feel like was not discussed or not even talked about, which was Obi-Wan Kenobi, Jedi Detective.
Yeah.
This show scratches that fucking amazingness that I loved about it because it was fucking Columbo. Like, right? Like, I love Columbo. Like, I think that I've been on file as saying that, like, murder mysteries are, like, my catnip. Like, other than, like, Star Wars and, like, shit like that, like, my catnip, my cinematic catnip, or, like, catnip that you can just get me to chew on for hours, is murder mysteries with a detective. Like, Attack of the Clones, the thing that works the most for me is Obi-Wan Kenobi going detective and trying to solve a mystery. This is that fucking thing stretched out over a season, so of course you're gonna get me. But the funniest part about this is that Soul is Columbo, right? But he's saddled with a bunch of young upstarts that ruin his, like, considered detailed, like, methodology, right? And the big one being Yord. But I love Yord for doing that. I love Yord for being a stick in the mud Jedi, the Mace Windu of it all, because it creates some great tension in the show, which you should absolutely have. But it's, like, amazing to watch them build off of something that I really kind of loved, and something that has not been in, like, if we think about it, has there been a mystery show or a mystery element to anything that they've done with Star Wars recently?
I mean, there's some Obi-Wan stuff in the Clone Wars. Like, they take chunks of episodes and devote it to this, like, Obi-Wan as a detective thing. But, like, in...
Or going undercover. Like, but that's the Clones, right?
But that was what people would consider, quote, proper Star Wars, not really.
Yeah. Like, right? Like, but I feel like... Okay, so, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to throw something out there that this feels like the most Star Wars-y thing that I've seen in a long time. Like, it instantly feels like Star Wars. Like, it's not imitating Star Wars. It's not a version of Star Wars, Mandalorian. It's not, like...
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan? Oh, Jesus Christ. Andor? Like, this is what I feel, like, this is what I wanted desperately Andor to be.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I wanted it to be Star Wars with a capital S and a capital W, but it wasn't. It was Tony Gilroy doing whatever Tony Gilroy does, and it being adjacent to Star Wars. And then people just, oh, the visual style is there, but the storytelling. Like, for me, the storytelling is Star Wars. Like, it feels like... Like, the Star Wars-y, like, it feels like Clone Wars. Like, when we were in the midst of Clone Wars and we were getting, like, with a lot of people, I think, don't, because they've never watched the Clone Wars, unrestricted, undiluted Star Wars storytelling. In the way that, in the way that George, I feel like George would watch this and smile to himself, because this is what he wanted from Star Wars. He wanted to be able to tell, like, High Republic stuff. Because this is kind of High Republic, right? 100 years before the Empire. It's kind of fucking great. Like, it really feels like it. Like, and I, to your point, like, I get,
why May is so kind of like she's two-dimensional, right? She's angry, and that's about it.
Like, yeah, honestly, it feels like it's part of the problem with it's a prequel era problem with Anakin is that he comes off in the movies as such a like flat character. Like, he's just defined by like, I'm angry and things should be this way because I'm angry. And the movies didn't do a good enough job in presenting his journey. And I we've only got two episodes. We don't really know May's journey, but once you realize what's going on, like it's not compelling to me. Only the mystery of why she's doing it is compelling. Like, you know, I think the first episode ends with her like walking on the rocks and that figure with the red lightsaber, yes, like saying that whatever they're saying. And it's like, I don't know what this is all about. Like, it didn't grab me, but all the stuff with the Jedi really grabbed me. Like, and they're not shying away from, oh, they're kind of problematic still. Like,
yeah,
even in this like high era, like centuries of peace, they're still problematic. Down to like, there's a reason May wants to kill these four specific Jedi. Like, one of them literally just accepts, I mean, they both kind of accept their death, but one of them willingly walks into it and is like, okay, I'll drink this.
Yeah. Like, because he's been contemplating and like for years after the incident.
Yeah, they say 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. He hasn't spoken a word. He's been deep into Jedi trance, which is like that. Okay, so like what I love is the weird tiny little tendrils of like High Republic lore that we're getting that isn't discussed. It's just we pass by it, right? Like how there's a Jedi temple in every like, you know, Republic planet, right? And there's Jedis that are there. And
they're not open to people. They're only for the Jedi. Like, they're guarded.
Exactly. Yeah, they're guarded by like robots. The must be dozen. Ha ha ha. I can't think of those names. The ones that Jabba uses.
Yeah.
Like the guard droids. But also, they're attuned to Force. They're not attuned to like voice recognition or anything like that. They're attuned to Force. That's why they can't get in. Like, I love that kind of notion. I also love that. I love that we get a relationship that we like. I love that there's these relationships at play that we have no idea about, but we can instantly understand and recognize the dynamics. I'm talking about like when we get to that planet and we meet Quimir, who's played by Manny Jacinto, who,
yeah,
like talk about 2 seconds going from Jason Mendoza to this weird like smuggler kind of dude that might be, that definitely is a Force user. Fucking cool as shit. Like, that's like he makes May more interesting because of their relationship together.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like they do stuff like, okay, like they do stuff that I don't know, like it's elegant in a way that I feel like George's direction doesn't get enough credit for, or the way that he does things, because it's such a visual kind of thing. Like, Star Wars is such a visual thing that we don't give it credit for. And they've kind of gone away from that. Especially with the Jedi stuff, it's all about explaining the fuck away these story tropes in this, like, let's go ahead and get a thingamajigger that's going to solve the issue that we're all.
I was, you know, a lot of people want to, I get it, prequels aren't the best, but like, there is none of that shit And the only thing you can point to in the prequels for me that I'm like, this is fucking weird, is like hiring a bounty hunter to kill somebody, and then that bounty hunter hires somebody else to kill that person. Mm-hmm. Like the levels of in Attack of the Clones of the bounty hunter thing, it's like, well, this is fucking weird. But like, that's it. Like, there's no MacGuffin bullshit that they're chasing. It's just like, it just is what it is, and you get the story, and there is shorthand to it, but it's not fucking like, oh, we have to find this to unlock this. It's not a video game fetch quest. Like, it's so much better for it. Yeah. And like, making a mystery like the heart of this helps with that, like, because it's not about getting the MacGuffin. It's about like, what did these characters do? Like,
yeah, what was the incident that caused a fraction, like these two twins to be refracted on this thing?
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's a very Star Wars idea to have twin siblings separated at birth, one raised by Jedi, one raised by dark force users.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we're going to get like the flashback by the end of like, I have speculations. She's not the cause. May is not the cause of her family dying.
No, it's not. I feel like, have you heard what Hedlund has called the series? Like, which I find is very interesting, which I feel like, so she's said that, like, in her pitch to Kathy Kennedy and Dave Filoni, she said at the end, this story is essentially Frozen meets Kill Bill.
Okay.
To which, if you look at the context at which she's doing things, the twins and Frozen, it makes sense, right? Two sides of the same coin. Like, I mean, and like talking about trauma, like, you know, trauma and how two people deal with trauma in different ways. That's kind of very interesting. Like, and the fact that there's like this component of revenge that we don't have an idea. Like, it's peanut butter and chocolate, right? Like, I know it sounds weird, but like, you know, my peanut butter gets mixed up with my chocolate gets mixed up with my peanut butter, and it becomes this great thing. Revenge and murder mystery. You combine them together, and you get this great thing where you can kind of see where this might be headed with that kind of context. But like, that framework of a mystery, damn, does that work for Star Wars? Like, I don't know why, but it just does. Another thing that I kind of love is that we don't have everything explained out to us. Like, and that's Star Wars, right? Like, you know, your father was a great pilot and a great man. Like, you know, yeah, I served on the Clone Wars along with your father. This damn idealistic full crusade. Like, all of these things are things that are said and are never deep dived into in the original trilogy, because we didn't have a budget, but also because I think that we've talked about this ad nauseum, is allow the imagination to fill the gaps, right? Yeah. Which Star Wars never does. This is doing it. Like, these first two episodes, that's not to say that in the next six, they explain everything away and we go, oh, God damn it, why did they do that? But being the Russian dolls of it all, like, the thing that I loved about Russian dolls is that one mystery, I mean, it was literally within the title, right? One mystery led to another mystery led to another mystery. It was a never ending thing of a consecutive series of mysteries that further allowed you to like use your imagination. What the fuck is going on here? I hope that that's what's happening here, is that there's layer upon layer, and it's more, there's more there that's going to be left unsaid and not explained, or maybe more more questions than answers, because that's kind of the best Star Wars for me, is when I'm not getting all the mythology, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Was there, like, so the funny part is that we really haven't talked about the action that's in the movie or in the show, which there's very minimal action, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
I really, really like it. Like, I like the, it's a very OG Star Wars approach to it. Like Clone Wars, well, the Clone Wars certainly have more action, but the prequels definitely had more action than the original movies. But like, if you go to Star Wars, A New Hope, like there's very little traditional style, like fight action in that movie, almost none. Like the, what you have is between a like fucking 6.5 foot tall robot man and a 65-year-old old white dude who, you know, they can't really move that well. So I like the idea of it's kind of a Mr. Miyagi approach. Like it's for defense. It's not for attack. And like all the Jedi here use it initially as a defensive mechanism. Like it's never like the first thing they do. It's always like defend. I'll attack if I have to, if I can't talk you down. I really, really like that.
No, and I do too. Like, I really kind of like the fact that, like, it, and it sets it up right away with the fight between, between Mei and Indara. Is it Indara? Jedi Master Indara, where she's like, I'm not going to, like, she literally says, I'm like, you know, I don't, we Jedi don't draw our sabers only in defense.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't feel like something that gets like, and I feel like Lucas now, like with Filoni, like this is like a Filoni assist, right? You can just feel it. Like, it's not even like Hedlund is probably like, you know, the guidance by Filoni, because this is absolutely a Filoni thing, because it connects between what happens with what Jedis are supposed to be and what they end up becoming in the Clone Wars, which is a reactionary strike first force, right? Because that's what they are in, like, from the Clone Wars on, you see that, right?
Yeah, they become like soldiers.
Police, and that's soldiers, yeah. Conscripted
military.
That's not
what they were supposed to do.
Yep, absolutely. And I kind of love that we reset it from the beginning. Like, it's not even like something that happens 20 minutes in. It's literally the first scene that you see. They reset this. I just love it. I love what they're doing. I love the storytelling. I love Lee Jung-jae, or JJ as he's known by everybody, like as Master Soul, is like, literally, like you said, like Qui-Gon Jinn 2.0.
Yeah.
And just like instantly like you watch him and you go, man, why wasn't he around when Anakin was around? Because A, he never would have gotten involved with the whole Darth Maul thing, right? He probably would have made Obi-Wan a better Jedi. And he probably could have wrangled Anakin into being the greatest Jedi. Like, well, just from the first two episodes.
The idea of, like, taking what they did with Anakin, like, he takes this young girl on as his Padawan. She's too old to do, like, to go through the traditional route. Like, it's a very Anakin-esque story. But then, like, this version of the Jedi Council or whatever, like, she becomes, like, she ages herself out. She doesn't like they see through, like, hey, you're not going to be able to be a Jedi Knight. You know, so she just sees herself out. Like, it's what should have happened with Anakin and didn't, yep, because they were caught up in the middle of this war, and, you know, he was essential to them winning it. He was very powerful in the Force. She isn't that powerful, obviously. No. Also, I will say it does continue the trend of Star Wars shows introducing me to my next favorite droid. Like, whether I love the shows or not, the seasons or not, or whatever, every show has introduced us to a droid that I'm just like, oh, I love this droid. Like, this is great. Like, even Obi-Wan is, like, on and off as it was. Like, we got Leia's droid, and he was just so much fun. So,
Pip here. Droids.
Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, this is great. I love this. Like, I want a Pip, man.
Which, Pip is a multi-tool also, which is genius, right? Like, everything that you could possibly want is,
she rips his head off. I was like, oh, no.
But uses him, like, he's, like rips his head off and uses him as both a screwdriver and a welder tool, which I love. Like, I was like, okay, this is a droid that you kind of want on your side, because he's both iPad, Leatherman, and a droid. Like, literally a droid. That is kind of great. I do love that they take the trope of the blue collar worker that was supposed to be Rey Skywalker and does it better. Literally does it better. Like, better than, like, I don't know, like, the farther I get away from Rey, the more unlikable of a character she's become for me because of the JJ of it all. I like the fact that OSHA is not, like, it's not like she's the chosen one or she's supposed to be the greatest Padawan of all time. Like, she's just literally a woman that, like, should have been a Jedi, but because of the PTSD of losing her family, was not. Right? Like there's nothing more to her, and there doesn't have to be, right? Like I love that this is ground level, right? Like, there's no, this is going to echo through the halls of the Jedi, right? Like, her becoming back, right? Like, I like that. I don't want them to be, like, the chosen one. Like, that was so fucking annoying with Rey. Like, why couldn't she just be a desert rat and leave it as is, right? Yeah. Like, but no, we had to go more. We had to, like, you know, let's skirt aside Finn. Let's, like move him away, even though he was, like, kind of, like, a great character. And let's make this other one, I don't know. Let's make her the Emperor's granddaughter. Okay, that's a fucking idea. It just, like, you know, with every passing, like Star Wars that actually gives a damn about its storytelling, it makes me hate Rise of Skywalker just that much more. Like, it really does. But, yeah, I mean, altogether, it's a fascinating show. Like, if it takes a downturn.
The 10% I don't like isn't because it's bad. It's just because I don't find it compelling, like, in the slightest, you know? That's better. That's a better ratio than a lot of Star Wars we've gotten in the last couple of years. So, I'm really excited to see where it goes. I was super, super concerned that Master Soul was, I was like, oh shit, she's about to kill him too. Like, what the hell, man? We're gonna lose three Jedi in two episodes. So excited about seeing a Wookiee Jedi. Holy shit. Cannot wait. We've got six more episodes of this, and if they keep this level of quality and don't drop the ending, it might wind up being the best Star Wars show live action that we've gotten. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Like, when they said that this could be their equivalent of Game of Thrones, like, that excites me now that I've seen the first two. Like, and, like, you know, in this High Republic era. Like, and okay, so like, here's another question for you. Like, the way that this fucking ends, like with the second episode, like they knew what they were doing, right? Because you totally want to see this Wookiee Jedi. You totally, like, and you get a little moment with him, and it's like, oh shit, they're really going to do this. They're really going to go deep into what we want or what certain fans have wanted to see, but we haven't really been given the kind of like, I'm glad it's this series and not anything else, because I feel like there would be something lacking if we didn't, or like if it was from anyplace else. But it excites me. Like, it really, like, it got me, like, that moment where he slams the door shut and then we cut to credits. I was like, holy shit, like, I really want this. Like, I, like, now I'm invested. Like, I want to see this Wookiee Jedi, and I want to see what happens next. I want to see who these, like, these bad guys, like, I want to see who the Dark Force is and what it evolves to, because I'm pretty sure it's not going to be Sith-based. It's going to be something entirely different, which I'm cool with. If it becomes this whole thing of, like, a Russian doll version of eventually it gets to the Sith, I'm cool with that. Like, I am so cool with that. But the big question becomes, and I don't know if you thought about this, I thought it was farther back, not 100 years. So my big question is this. Do we get Yoda?
I mean, one part of me is like, yeah, it's okay if we don't see Yoda. But the other part of me is very much like, it's a missed opportunity if we don't see Yoda. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think we should. Right?
I mean, absolutely. I feel like this is a show that's special enough to allow him some, like, if you're going to do it in Clone Wars, then you should be able to do it in this, but also you can also do it with Frank Oz. Like, if you don't do it with Frank Oz and the puppet, it's not worth it. Like, I don't even want you to fucking do it if you try to do CGI, right? Like I don't even want you to attempt it unless you have two things. You have Frank Oz and you have the puppet, like a la The Last Jedi. Like, it's the only way that I want it. Though I feel like we would get it if that's what we're going to get. But also, like, the thing that's fun is, please disagree with me if you feel like it, I feel like that would be something that would happen in 2 seasons from now rather than right now. Like, build the world and earn it. And then once you get it to the point to where this is a general threat, that's where it becomes. Because there's something, like, very interesting that they say. The Master Souls, like, the Jedi that's above him, I can't remember what her name was. She literally says, we want this off the books. We don't want anybody knowing about this, because this is just the kind of thing that the Council would need, that the Republic would need, the Republic High Council would need to get rid of us.
Yeah.
So there's a context that this is happening very deep cover, right?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
So it could very well be that this is something that doesn't happen until 2 or 3, but I'm okay with that. Like, I'd want them to earn the Yoda of it all, right? Like, we would want them to earn that kind of moment rather than just kind of, like, doing a cheap... like, it doesn't feel like it's going to be cheap. Like, I feel like all story beats are going to be earned. Like, I feel like Osha is not going to get a lightsaber until probably the end of the season, right? Like, just like May. Like, May is, like, I feel like whoever is training her, they're training her to use the Force before something as clunky as a lightsaber, which is kind of cool, right? Like, because she's learning how to kill, she's having to kill all of these Jedi in her process of revenge, but also it feels like it's training to move forward, because if you can't kill with the Force as a Sith or a Dark Force user or a Force witch, then you don't deserve the actual clunky weapon that everybody thinks that Jedi and Sith are known for.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I hope that there will be more of this show. I hope that, like, we're getting, we know we're getting 8 episodes.
Yeah.
I imagine that will wrap up the main mystery, but, like, or maybe not necessarily more of this specific show, but just more in this world, because I think it's, I've never been really interested in the High Republic era. I know they're really pushing it in the books, you know, as kind of like the new thing to explore. None of it has caught me, but it probably because it's all started in book form and less in, like, for me, Star Wars starts on the screen. Like, I can follow it to other places. I can follow it to the comics and to the books, but I need that on-screen association to pull me in, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. It's why the comics work so well, because they're rifling the spots between the movies, right? So we have a visual reference for them, like Dr. Opera. Like the Darth Vader comic and the Star Wars comic.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know,
and you can introduce other characters that way, but for create a whole new world of Star Wars and not have it start on screen, like as either an animated or live action form, it didn't pull me in. Like, even the High Republic comic books, like, I could not get into them. But, like, if this era continues in the TV shows and films, and they start bringing those characters in, then I'm way more interested. And I still might not like the comic book stuff, but I'm more apt to go check out the comics or the novels or whatever. Whereas I tried to read some of the comics and I was just like, none of this is that interesting to me. Like, even with Yoda, like, who shows up in those comics, like, it just wasn't that interesting to me. So none of it pulled me in. So if this show does that, then it will have definitely done its job.
No, absolutely. And it does, like, instantly it does for me too, as well. It's just like, I'm like, shit, maybe I should give this, like, you know, the Star Wars High Republic stuff a little bit of credence. Though I feel like what the show does well for me is it gives this weird, like, I don't know if it's ick, but it's like this thing where I go, man, these Jedis have their heads so far up their ass, like Yord, right? Yord is the prime example of it. And maybe that's the whole point of it, right? Every single Jedi that we see that is not Sol and his Padawan are like insufferable assholes.
Dude, like, when they're trying to come up with the plan to go interrogate the Manny Jacinto's character, and Yord is just like, well, here's what we do, and the Padawan's just like, oh, we could just do this. That's way simpler and, you know, more strategic. Mm-hmm. Like, and Sol's just like, yeah, we're going with the Padawan's plan. Good job.
Which, I love that she is way smarter than Yord in every way, shape, and form. Like, yeah. So, like, I love that he's like, he's got his shirt off and she looks at him with such disgust and she's like, put your shirt on. You know, it's just like, I love the little mini relationship that they're building. Like, she, like, if she turns out to be like a little Arya Snow, or I'm sorry, an Arya Stark, I would not be surprised. Like, if she becomes one of fandom's favorites, because I could absolutely see, because of Lee Jung-jae's ties to Korean cinema. I mean, like, okay, so, like, let me just stop here right now for everybody to appreciate, if they don't know who JJ is, who he is. So this dude is like, okay, like I was telling my wife, I'm like, this dude is the South Korean equivalent to, like, George Clooney. He's that kind of level of star. He's just, like, in the last couple of years, he's just taken on his directing career, to which He made a movie 2 years ago that is literally one of my top 10 of that year. He made this hardcore spy movie that he directed and starred in about 80s North Korea, South Korea relations. This man is like one of the bastions of Korean cinema. So I'm saying this because if he ends up dying in this series somewhere, I will not be surprised, because he has been on record as saying like Squid Game has helped his career in a huge way, but it also, he is a very Korean cinema forward guy. Like, he is not leaving Korean cinema. So like, Star Wars time is good for press, good for money, good for him being a super, like him ascending to like the English language world that doesn't watch subtitles. But I guarantee you, he has it built into his contract that he is not allowed, like he is allowed his freedom. And maybe there's an end point for this, which with a series like this, if he dies in the end of season one, I would not be surprised. Like, if he's a one season and done, because they write him so well. And we all know, whenever they write a character so extra, extra, a la Ned Stark, we know that something bad's going to happen, right? And he is on that list. And it would not surprise me. Guys, get buckled up for a very wild series where we're going to hurt. Like, I haven't seen a Star Wars show that hurt me or a Star Wars thing that has hurt me in a long time. Like, since I was a kid, basically. So this might be that first thing where, like, Seoul may be the center of it, but maybe it's intended to be that he ends up being the sacrificial lamb that throws everything off, because then that would really send shockwaves through this entire series that they've set up, because it seems a little too perfect and a little too clean right now. I don't know. That's my thought on the matter, and you know, just how good this is and how I could see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I'm so excited for what this show could bring about, like, and I really, really hope Disney, Kathleen Kennedy, Lucasfilm as a whole is seeing like the positives and not focusing on like, I hope they've learned their lesson with the like, oh, like there's like a subsect of like just absolutely jackass Star Wars fans who, you know, are never going to be happy and stop listening to them. Like, you know, we see we have a good thing, we're just going to keep moving forward. So, yeah, but I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking more about the Acolyte in the weeks to come. So, yeah, I guess that'll do it for this week. Ran a little long, but that's okay. Even though we didn't get to talk about Bad Boys much, but.
But, I mean, you know, Star Wars, right? Like, we always, like, that's the thing. Like, guys, always remember, like, you know, whenever it comes to Star Wars, you're going to get a heavy-duty episode. You know, and good Star Wars, I mean, hell, I mean, like you said, we went a little bit longer. But there was all for a reason that we didn't get to Bad Boys this week. It was because we had a lot to say about The Acolyte, which I'm genuinely surprised by, because I was genuinely worried. I don't know why, but I was.
It's an unproven era of Star Wars characters we don't even fucking know. Like, somebody who's never worked in this kind of genre. Like, it certainly had all of the recipe to be a complete and utter, like, whiff, you know? Yep. And it wasn't. Like, even the bad stuff wasn't really a whiff for me. It just wasn't very compelling. So, more on that to come. We'll be back next week talking about, hopefully, some Bad Boys and who knows what else. There's something coming out this week. No, that's next weekend. Is it Game of Thrones premieres? It's in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
It's a couple weeks. Yeah. It's the 16th, I think. So it's the weekend coming up.
Okay. Yeah. So we won't, so, have, like, we won't have seen it by then. No.
Well, I won't have seen
it. You're not going to see it at all.
Yeah. So. Let's be fucking honest. Like, I'm definitely not seeing it. Though you are allowed, we will definitely talk about the following week, because I'm genuinely curious, because, you know, the Dragon show is fucking wild to me. Like, it's just really wild. Like, you know, even though I've not seen the rest of it, who knows, maybe I'll watch the rest of it. And I mean, because I think I only have like 3 or 4 episodes left, and I'll kind of get into it.
Oh, The Boys does premiere this week.
Oh, shit.
Oh, first 3 episodes drop Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess maybe we're going to be talking about that.
Yep.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. Shit. Okay. We also have the Bear episode
coming up, man.
We also have what?
The Bear coming up.
Oh, yes, we do. We do. Well, I have to get my wife on that show. And catch up, because I know she wants to watch it. So we will be. Yeah. Have you watched it yet? Have you done a whole?
Yeah. We haven't really talked about it, but yeah, okay. I finished. I had started it a while back and only got about halfway through season 1, and I was like, I can't do this. But I finally went back and went through all of season 1 and season 2, and yeah, I mean, it's an excellent show, but holy shit, it's so heavy.
Yeah, it really is. Like, how I got through it was like, it wasn't a dump. It was like, watch one episode. Okay, I'm done for a couple of days. Watch another episode. Oh, I'm done for a couple of days. Like, it's just because it's so clenched fist. Like, it's anxiety in a different way. And I guess we'll talk about that once we get to it, because I also, like, I mean, the thing is that it's dumping all the episodes all at once.
Yeah, it's weird to me. Like,
it really is. But they're already working on the 4th season, from what I understand. Like, it's back to back. I don't know if I can handle I don't know how people can handle a watch.
Yeah, I can't really binge it. So.
No. So, maybe it'll be something that we do for like our 4th of July episode or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, something where, like, we're like, okay, well, we don't want to talk Minions and Despicable Me. Let's fucking just talk about this. Have you seen the recent trailer for that before we go? Have you seen the new?
Yeah. I just become
super powered.
Yeah. I'm so like, after the second one, I was just out on that whole franchise. So.
I mean, they're like, it's weird how it's risen to a fever pitch. Like, so many people fucking love this series. Like, it's gonna be the big thing. Like, right? Like I fully well feel, and we'll just go on this, that it's going to be the thing that saves the box office. If nothing else does, everybody.
Yeah.
I mean,
Despicable Me and Deadpool will be the big things. So weird. Go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, which isn't much right now, but with Game of Thrones coming back and Star Wars back, I'm trying to like twist the arms of my other co-host to actually sit down and podcast with me. We'll see. And you can check out my writing and Adam's writing over at his website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where we've got a ton of content. I do have to promote, just because I know you love the same era of trash movies as I do. I'm in the process of writing about the special edition that they just released of Jeff Speakman in The Perfect Fucking Weapon.
But
The Perfect Weapon. White dude doing karate and starring in studio produced movies was a fucking thing in the 90s. And Jeff Speakman was begat of Steven Seagal. If you don't know who Jeff Speakman is, look him up. It's a fucking wild story. And the movie works. I'm genuinely shocked that like something from that early of an era, like I actually kind of liked it. It's trash. It's low budget, but it fucking works. So look for that this week on the site. And then, like I said, like Logan said, his writing's there. We're at the final leg of his 50.
Yeah,
coming up on the 50.
I'm working on the last few right now. I've got one already written, and I'm in the middle of writing another one, and then deciding what the last little bit will be. So,
absolutely. All right. With that, guys, we'll be back next week.
We'll see you next week.
Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.